From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Tuesday when Rochester Democrats hold their primary elections. And on the ballot, three candidates for mayor of Rochester, the incumbent Lovely Warren, county legislator Jim Shepard, who you heard last hour, and longtime local journalist Rachel Barnhart. All candidates were ready to debate here with Voice of the Voter, of which WXXI is a proud member. That debate had to be canceled due to the mayor's allergic reaction that led to her hospitalization for multiple days. As soon as WXXI knew that we would not be hosting a debate before the primary, we reached back out to all three Democratic candidates to schedule another hour here on the program with the candidates. Two accepted, the mayor declined, citing scheduling issues, but we've made clear to the campaigns we would be extremely flexible with scheduling to ensure their choice of slots. Mayor's campaign told us they understood, but nothing on her calendar was workable before the election over these last few weeks. So you did hear James Shepard last hour. This hour, we welcome back Rachel Barnhart to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan, for this tremendous public service you've been doing throughout the campaign.
Well, that's very kind. Let's start with the big item on the news. I started with Jim Shepard. And again, I know it's sort of a shoot for the moon thing, but we are seeing a lot of people talking about could Rochester actually get in the running to get Amazon to come bring 50,000 jobs here? Jeff Bezos says Amazon wants a second city to essentially be a hub home, could bring 50,000 jobs. You already have Bob Duffy writing letters, people like that, saying we've got all the ingredients here. Is that realistic? Do you think that that could happen here?
The only way it could happen here is if we throw gobs and gobs and gobs of money at Amazon. New York State, I believe, gave $18 million in tax credits on Staten Island. And that's the only way it's going to happen here in Rochester. New York State has showered these kinds of deals on other communities. It could shower one here. We have to make sure it's worth it. And I think that, of course, Rochester is a wonderful place to set up shop. But New York State is at a disadvantage in many ways, both for utility costs, infrastructure costs, taxes, and that's why these deals happen. I am no fan of corporate welfare, but that is the only way we would ever be able to get a deal like that done, and we have to acknowledge that.
All right, so take me through it. Mayor Barnhart is on the phone with Jeff Bezos. He's got a couple of cities in the running, and he says, look, Rochester is in the running, but I need some concessions. We need some breaks and some subsidies. You've been very tough on how that works for developers, yeah, local developers, et cetera. Would you say to Jeff Bezos, look, we've got to draw the line somewhere, or would you say, you know, we're willing to give you the store?
I think Jeff Bezos is a man who cares very much about poverty. He cares a lot about philanthropy. And what I would say to him is we need to have a deal that benefits our community as well as your company. Yes, it's wonderful to have lots of jobs, but there are also costs when you have a company like that come to town, and especially something that large. And we can't give away the store either, because in the end, we could end up paying a lot more than we get. So what I would say to him is we can work out a deal in which you are helping our community and you are getting something that helps your company. And that is the approach that you would have to take with him. I can sell Rochester all day long to anybody. I love this community. I know what our assets are. We have wonderful people. We have wonderful workers. We have excellent infrastructure. We certainly have the space, but you have to make sure a deal like that benefits us because it would be very costly.
So let's talk about jobs then, because I think we can agree that you know, the Amazon thing is a long shot. So let's assume that doesn't happen and that's not going to be the shoot for the moon, get out of poverty and put 50,000 people to work situation. When it comes to creating jobs, what is number one? What's the most achievable item on your agenda that a Mayor Barnhart can start doing early in 2018? What is doable?
Sure. We have to make Rochester the place that people want to live and do business, the city. We have to make it the number one place. The first thing that I would do is work with our state and local economic development agencies to do regional planning that puts the city first. We've had several jobs announcements in Henrietta recently. That's so discouraging. These are not places that are accessible by regular transit. That condemns any city workers to long bus commutes, if these places are even served by transit when needed, and it condemns them to subprime auto loans. We have lost in the city of Rochester more than 30,000 jobs since 2002, not jobs that left the area, jobs that moved to the suburbs, and they're going farther and farther away away from the city core. We need a mayor who will fight that, have a city-first economic development agenda. That does not mean city versus suburbs. What it means is working with development agencies to make sure that the city is the most attractive option first before you start awarding these incentives. Or you offer extra incentives. No matter what, though, companies should be locating on transit lines in order to get these breaks. I am so passionate about this. Our community is just not set up for job sprawl. You know, in the last hour, we heard Jim Shepherd towards the end talk about, well, we just have to get people to work. It's not going to work that way. Our system is not set up. The transit system will never be set up to handle job sprawl. It just isn't. We should be locating jobs near people. That should be the number one priority. Now, you mentioned job creation. I am a big believer that Rochester needs to add a fiber internet network as crucial infrastructure to not only level the educational playing field, half of our city kids do not have broadband internet at home, but also to create a culture of job creation. Chattanooga, Tennessee did this, and they claim it's created thousands of jobs. So you can create a startup culture. This kind of infrastructure is crucial. Fiber internet, 1 gigabit service, is incredibly expensive. What if we're able to offer this to businesses at a much lower price? Businesses would flock to Rochester. People would be able to start businesses in their homes. This kind of infrastructure would really put us on the map. We did a feasibility study. The RCSD did a study. This isn't really my idea. The RCSD did a study. They want to do this. They could share the cost with the city and a private vendor. It would pay for itself. We can do it.
It would pay for it.
Not the capital cost.
Not
the operating.
Not
upfront.
No. So upfront, what's it going to cost?
It's about $70 million to wire every home. Now, that's this model that was studied. There are other models. We'd have to clearly come up with a plan that people like and that has buy-in. But the capital cost would be about $70 million. The city would not have to pay all those costs because we would have partners. But the operating costs would be sustainable from people who want to pay for 1 gigabit service.
Right.
But it would be free to households at the speeds we currently get.
This is, I think, a good time to look comprehensively at some of your big proposals, because I know you've pushed back at this idea. Last night at the debate, you pushed back on the idea that they're not achievable. You've talked about cutting taxes 50%, not doing that in the first year, setting aside essentially 3 years for the city to plan and to create the revenue backup for that 50% tax cut. One of the ways was selling the city's water system.
Consolidating, I prefer.
Okay, consolidating the city's water system. I've talked to people who are currently in government, people who used to be in government are now retired. I have not found anybody who tells me that's a feasible idea.
So, well, it hasn't been studied, so I don't know how people can say that. I know people who say it is feasible in government. We would need the state to do a comprehensive study. They would pay for it. They did one in Onondaga County. They found that it was feasible to consolidate their water systems. The fact is, Monroe County and the city of Rochester both have wonderful water systems, and they share water right now. The fact is, the city of Rochester infrastructure is going to need some work ahead. And if this is something we can do to get more bang for the buck, we should do it. But we don't know that. It has never had an independent study. It's never been done. The state could pay for this. And I will say, we would never do something like this without shared governance. As it is now, there are no Democrats on the Water Authority Board. We would need shared governance. What Mayor Warren said last night was irresponsible. How she characterized this, I mean, she implied that we would turn into Flint, Michigan. What she is essentially saying is that suburban residents drink poisoned water. That is just so irresponsible. There's nothing wrong with studying something. I threw a lot of ideas out in my campaign. And I did that because I want to get us thinking about ways that we can innovate and ways that we can have transformational change in Rochester instead of nibbling around the edges of solutions. And both Jim Shepherd and Lovely Warren are mired in program-first thinking that has no measurable impact on poverty and our economy. We're not going to solve our problems that way. We just aren't. We could start to solve our problems if we think about big-picture things that we can do to make Rochester the only place that makes sense for families and businesses. This is one proposal that I had. If I get into office and I start asking the public and I start asking advisors, can we do this? And everyone says, we don't really like this. No, then we don't do it. I'm a huge believer in getting people around the table because that's what leaders do. Leaders get people around the table. They talk to the public. They talk to experts. They make sure that it is the best possible idea. And it's very impolitic of me to say this, but I'm being honest. If my ideas aren't the best, we move on to ones that are. But what we can't do is stand still. We have to take control of our own destiny. We're not going to do it through an alphabet soup of programs that help 5 people here, 10 people there, 100 people over here. Not going to work.
Okay, but if you can't, are you going to sell the water system or consolidate for $100 million? Do you think Monroe County Water Authority is really going to do that?
Oh, yeah. Well, Monroe County now has the capacity to handle this.
But who on the Water Authority has told you that they're going to do that?
I'm not discussing whom I've talked to. I don't think people want to get involved in a political campaign. But again, we can't really put a price tag on it. We would need to do a study. And we would have to make sure that the city is getting value. I mean, Bill Johnson and Jack Doyle went over this many years ago. And he felt the county undervalued it and said no. But they didn't do an independent study of it. They just went back and forth in terms of negotiations. It's incredibly important to do a major study of the infrastructure, the finances, the assets. And the state would pay for it again. I mean, there's no risk here. There's absolutely no risk to anyone by taking a look at something and asking a question.
All right, then let's say, though, early in your term as mayor, it does come back that it's just not going to work here. You still want to cut taxes by 50% starting in after 3 years. You've got to come up with the money somewhere.
Well,
what other ideas are there?
Right. Well, if we can't replace the revenue, then we're not going to be able to go that low. I do believe very strongly, though, that we have to get our fair share from the state. That's another component of this plan, and we have to tighten our belts. Now, let's talk about this. I mean, Buffalonians pay a lot less in property taxes than Rochester, and that is because they get more money from the state. And they get $200 more per capita from the state. I've never heard a mayor put it in terms like that to the governor and say, look, our residents are getting hit in the wallet because you give Buffalonians more money. That is a politically, I think that is a politically charged thing to say to a governor who is very sensitive about property taxes, who's up for re-election and wants to run for president. He's going to have all of Rochester saying, look, we pay more in taxes because you guys in Albany won't give us more money. And it's also going to take leadership to get everybody on the same page for a common goal of getting Rochester its fair share from Albany and getting the attention that we deserve. But right now we have people who fight with each other and don't talk to each other.
Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Rachel Barnhart, my guest for the hour. James Shepard, last hour, the Democratic mayoral primary is this coming Tuesday. They had a debate last night. I don't want to get hung up on this all hour. I know that you've responded to a lot of people who are asking you about something as strange as your own water bill. And I think even by raising this, I could be accused of getting into frivolous, strange stuff. But you think it's a legitimate thing to raise right now?
I think it was the most important moment of the debate.
You really believe that last night?
I do.
Why?
I do. First of all, last night's debate showed why you need more than one debate. I was disappointed that not a lot of the questions focused on issues. I thought Adam's questions to the candidates were very, very good. But because a lot of the questions were focused on record, I'm stuck responding to record and not really able to pivot in a minute to talk about the things that we're talking about right now. That said, I'm incredibly grateful to Channel 8 and the League of Women Voters. We were talking about Lovely Warren's campaign finance issues. And she said that allegations against her were not sustained. I don't believe that for one second. So I challenged her and said, do you have proof? You know, do you have a letter? Did they clear you? She would not answer the question. Instead, kept talking about the city's bond rating and all these wonderful things she's done. I mean, she was really programmed. And I kept asking this. And then she said, well, by the way, pay your water bill. It's late. You can give me the check. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I owe money on my water bill. It's usually $30. After the debate, we went online. We looked up my water bill. You can look up anyone's water bill. And my bill was $73. It was due today. It didn't show any late anything or payments. Her campaign communications guy named Brad Willows then tweeted that he filed a FOIL request for past due amounts for all
freedom
three
of
candidates.
Information. Freedom of information, yeah.
Correct, open records. And that my bill showed a past due balance of $35.02. We need to think about the message that was sent. by lovely Warren talking about my water bill. We have a mayor who researched her opponent's water bill and financial records through the city to score political points and shame her in a televised debate in a city where a lot of people struggle to pay their bills. I do not want to make personal attacks in this campaign, and I've avoided that. But we do need to think about what this says about lovely Warren. We need to think about what this says about her campaign. They were very proud of themselves. They bragged about this. They couldn't wait to tell the world that I owe $35 on my water bill. And she did this in the context of dodging questions about issues that could get her charged with crimes. And I thought it was an outrageous and disturbing moment in that campaign. I thought she had been doing okay in the debate until then. She's very, very good at kind of flooding the zone with dubious accomplishments. She's difficult to debate in that way. But at that moment, I think she really revealed who she is. But we always knew that. But she reminded people, and I thought it was so discouraging.
Well, to be fair to the mayor, who has, again, if you're just joining us, the reason we have Jim Shepherd and Rachel Barnhart is when we had to cancel our Voice of the Voter televised debate that WXXI was going to host, we invited all the campaigns to come back to this program one more time before the election, gave them a wide open slate of slots, and the mayor's campaign simply couldn't find a time that worked in the last few weeks before the election.
And I do want to say something else. I mean, I made sure I don't have any overdue library books, unpaid parking tickets, and my dog has a license. Okay. I'm sure they checked things.
But what I'm going to say is the mayor isn't here to sort of respond to that, to what you're saying here.
That was her choice.
And what she said last night was, her little addendum to the water bill was, you want to manage the city's finances? So in her view, it was justified to ask whether you're current on your own bills if you want to manage an entire city's finances.
That's ridiculous. I was current on my bill, according to the city website. And again, how is this a moral failing of mine that I had $35 outstanding in water? By the way, I'd paid it today, but when it was due. How is that a moral failing? And how is that in any way equivalent to breaking campaign finance laws?
And so here's the other part of that. City Councilman Adam McFadden, who has been a supporter of the mayor, said on Twitter when people were asking him about that this morning, that comment played well with the mayor's base, because they're tired of hearing about PayPal errors, honest mistakes, things like that. And that was a way to kind of shut it down and say, look, can we move on and focus on the future, on the issues? We've been hung up on that stuff.
I don't think last night's debate, the goal was to cleave any voters off of lovely Warren. My goal was to get undecideds and Jim Shepherd voters. I think, you know, there are people very loyal to lovely Warren. It's my belief after knocking on 5,000 doors that she will get less than half of the vote on Tuesday. And I think that's the scenario that we are presented with. People are deciding between me and Jim Shepherd.
You also said to her, you committed felonies. There's no evidence that she committed felonies.
There is evidence she committed felonies if you read the law and look at her own publicly filed campaign finance reports. Now, I'm disappointed that the local media has not called local state experts on campaign finance, who would tell you this is George Maziar's territory we're in. It is absolutely illegal. Whether the question is not whether it's illegal. The question is whether the State Board of Elections and the Attorney General will act. I'm completely comfortable saying that she did that. And I also did make it clear, though, at the debate that this is an investigation that we don't know the status of and we don't know if anything will happen. But I'm totally comfortable saying she broke laws. I know the laws and I know what her filings are. And if I was a reporter, this all would have come out.
All right. So if everyone's okay with it, enough on water bills.
That's fine. I think it was important to mention because, you know, this was a tool to distract from her own problems. And it was low. It was petty. And I think voters saw it for what it is. And it was sad.
Let me get our first phone call in. And it's on the subject of experience, which comes up in the mm-hmm. campaign quite a bit. This is from Karen in Rochester. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, I heard you say earlier on Ms. Barnhart that you didn't really have a chance to talk about, you know, your record or your experience, and you have the time right now. Can you talk to us about what your experience is and why we should even consider you as the mayor. What do you bring to the table for us?
Yeah, very grateful for that question. And I really was hoping last night to get an experience question, because I think that's people's biggest reservation about me. I spent 18 years holding government accountable, holding elected officials accountable, evaluating their decisions, evaluating programs based on evidence. Lovely Warren and Jim Shepherd are the very people I held accountable, and I wouldn't be here if I thought they were doing a good job. I held police chiefs accountable. I reported on crime. I talked to crime victims' families. I gave a voice to the voiceless. I also have a very, very long history of holding systems accountable, pushing my employers to make sure that we were covering politics and government, to make sure that we were performing our civic duty as television stations, which, let me tell you, is very difficult in television news. I challenged a state law that forbade broadcasters from changing stations, and that was successful. I have a long history of taking on systems. I have extensive institutional knowledge, and I have extensive and relevant experience. If I am elected, the first thing I will do is get a transition team together of community leaders, and we will select the team at City Hall together. That team will have people with extensive management experience. I want a deputy mayor who has experience running complex organizations and preferably economic development experience as well. You know, there is a long list of people in our country, in our state, who have been successful as elected officials who had no management experience. I will get wonderful people around me to execute a vision. I am running against two people who have exactly the wrong experience. Lovely Warren's record speaks for itself. We have not moved the needle on important issues in this community. She didn't say one thing last night, and I've debated her 16 times now, and she says nothing about what she will do over the next 4 years. She's totally content with things the way they are. Jim Shepherd's experience, as I noted last night, is hugely problematic. He is a good man and a sincere man who has a life of public service, but he was a terrible leader. You can go to rachelformayor.com/Shepherd. And if you can read about all of the things that happened under his watch and all of the insensitive things that he has said and his lack of civic engagement and, frankly, his lack of policy knowledge and still vote for him, we do not share the same values. I know there are well-intentioned people who support Jim, but I encourage them to look at the record. I do not believe they're going to be able to support him. I have something that my two opponents lack. That is vision, and it is the will, and it is the determination and the courage to act. We need a fighter for this city. We cannot continue to go forward the way we are, or else we will be sitting here talking about the high poverty rate, the high unemployment rate, urban blight, crime. We will be sitting here talking about this 4 years from now. Absolutely nothing will change. And that is the thing that I'm most worried about. I'm not worried about losing. Rachel Barnhart can lose an election and life goes on. I am so worried about the future of this city. I'm running against two people who are bringing absolutely nothing to the table to move the needle on poverty, on employment, on structural racism, on bridging the digital divide, and on fighting for the city's interests first. I mean, Jim Shepherd has even said, as the county goes, so goes the city. No, Jim, it's exactly backwards. And if you don't understand that, you can't be mayor.
All right, so you mentioned some of the differences you have, and this is certainly a Democratic primary where among the three candidates, there are a lot of significant differences. Last hour, Jim Shepherd had a response to a listener named Brent who wrote to the program and wanted to ask both of our guests today. He said, President Trump has decided to lift the limits on military equipment transferred to police departments as part of the 1033 program. A New York State 2014 Freedom of Information reply indicates that Rochester has already accepted a mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle, an MRAP. Would you pursue, accept, or allow the RPD to pursue the transfer of more military equipment? Jim said, yes, and it's not a matter of having that equipment. It's a matter of using it judiciously. Do you agree with that?
To some extent. I remember back in 2005 when Cedric Alexander was briefly our police chief, he decided to send SWAT teams into neighborhoods on patrol. And I remember that really shaped how I thought about this issue of the militarization of police. I don't think police officers should be occupying forces or militarized forces. I would need to have a long talk with whoever is the police chief about, and it could be Mike Simonelli, I would need to have a long talk about what this is used for and how we use it and make a determination. In general, I am not in favor of the militarization of police.
Okay. And when it comes to certain high-profile issues, you know, there have been, unfortunately, sadly, a number of issues that have gotten national attention. Jim Shepherd said last hour that the case in Chicago of a man holding a knife, walking away from police officers and being shot 16 times. It took a while for that video to surface, and then that sort of changed things. He said that was a clear example of what looks like police misconduct. But I asked about Philando Castile in Minnesota, and he said he has not seen enough evidence that what the officer did was wrong in that case. What do you make of that?
I think this is everything you need to know about Jim Shepherd. You know, he has a long history of not holding officers accountable.
He says he doesn't. He says he has disciplined officers.
I'm sure he has, but according to the Democrat and Chronicle, his internal affairs department never sustained allegations of excessive use of force. I want to make something clear. There's no mayor or police chief on earth who's not going to have a controversy, who's not going to have a problem and not going to have people mad at them at any point in time and not going to have differences of opinion. But it's how you manage those situations. It's how you manage those controversies. I mean, Bob Duffy in 2002, I think, had four people die in police custody or at the hands of police. And that's not something we remember about his tenure, right? Bill Johnson and Bob Duffy successfully managed to communicate with the community about what happened and to talk about how to maintain relationships between police and citizens despite these incidents, some of which the police department paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to settle. And this happened under Bob Duffy, but we don't remember that about Bob Duffy. Jim Shepherd, though, had a number of controversies that were not handled properly and that eroded public trust. If you're always in a defensive posture, then things aren't going to go very well. You have to know how to listen to people. You have to know how to respond. Over the course of this campaign, and certainly over the course of his appearances on your show, his language about a civilian review board and the need for it has changed. But he still says, I'm all for it. Now he's saying, I'm all for a police accountability board. But it's always followed by the word, but. Black Lives Matter, but. You know, he had a chance to do things right, and he didn't. And again, I want to emphasize, he's a good person. He does a lot of community service, but he was not a good leader.
Rachel Barnhart is my guest for the hour. If you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. When we come back, a lot more on some of the hot issues in the campaign. Rachel's had a lot to say about education, segregation. There was some comments among the candidates about Brown v. Board, which you're going to hear when we come back, and we'll talk more about that. And we'll also talk about Parcel 5. Rachel Barnhart has said that she thinks it would be a failure of leadership if the city administration allowed RBTL to go to the suburbs, but she's not happy with what she's seen in regards to Parcel 5. How does she sort of square that up? We're going to talk about that and much more coming up. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, Amazon is looking for an American city to be the home for 50,000 new jobs and a new sort of second central home for Amazon. What about Rochester? Well, local leaders are writing the company letters saying we'd be a perfect fit. Would we? How could we compete in that? We'll find out. Then in our second hour, we're talking about possible voting reforms from a longtime local elections commissioner. Talk to you Monday. All right, a lot of phones ringing. After we get through a couple more questions, we're going to go to your calls for the rest of the hour with Rachel Barnhart. And I want to make something clear. We've been making it clear throughout these 2 hours, but please make no mistake. We reached out to all three Democratic campaigns after the cancellation of the Voice of the Voter televised debate. We lost the chance to have a televised debate. We know Mayor Warren was hospitalized for a number of days with an allergic reaction, and we certainly wish her and her health well. But we wanted to make sure that the candidates had a chance to come back and communicate with you directly before the election on Tuesday. We tried to clear our schedule and give them a lot of opportunity to do that. Jim Shepherd and Rachel Barnhart were able to do that. The mayor's campaign said they appreciated that, but they could not make that happen with her schedule before Tuesday. So certainly no effort on our part not to have all the voices there. And I just want to make that as clear as we possibly can. Before I get back to some of your comments, let's hear a little bit of what the mayor has had to say during this campaign. This is on the subject of education. This was at a community forum recently, and there have been a number of forums. The audio isn't the best, but I think you'll be able to hear what the mayor is saying clearly enough here. She's talking about Brown v. Board of Education and the question on whether we need to really get more active in desegregating the state of our schools. She thinks that that is sort of a misguided place to start, and she goes back to Brown v. Board, which, a little history, I recently learned myself that even if you agree with Brown v. Board, the justices who wrote that decision essentially said that they needed to integrate schools because children of color needed to be among whites to learn better. And you look back, and so it's kind of a racist decision, so it might have been a good decision for racist reasons. You're going to hear some of what the mayor has to say, and we'll talk to Rachel Barnhart about what she thinks. Let's listen.
One thing that I want to make clear is that given resources, opportunity, and structure, I believe that any child can learn. You have a charter school right here, the All Boys Charter School on Lake Avenue, that has a graduation of 97%. Majority of those students are African American. So this notion that Black kids and Hispanic kids can't learn unless they go to school with white kids is false. And I cannot believe that we continue to state that. This is a basic argument of the 1964 Board of Education, Brown versus Board of Education. And I think that it's wrong. I think that we have to give the same resources, the same opportunity, the same stability to the school district as we give to other suburban school districts, and the children will perform. We've shown it right here in Rochester. It can happen.
All right, Rachel, what do you think?
Whatever the reasoning for Brown versus Board of Education was to get all of the justices on the same page, no one is suggesting that children of color are deficient. My position is that study after study has shown when schools tip 40% poverty, achievement starts to decline. Integration is a value. It's a value because we should tie all of our children's fates together. We should not separate children. Integration is about building a community. It's about investing in our schools, and it's about a strong public school system. Warren is suggesting that you can have separate but equal. Just give us the same amount of money. We'll be fine. That's not the way life works. Separate is not equal. And she mentioned a charter school, the 97% graduation rate. Well, do we know if those kids all went to college? Do we know what their proficiency level is compared to a suburban affluent school? We do not. Separate is not equal.
So how are you going to change that?
I went to John Marshall High School, and it profoundly impacted my life and my beliefs on educational inequality and poverty and the divides in our community. A lot of my neighbors sent their kids to Aquinas. And my mother, a city school guidance counselor, used to say, gosh, you know, if everybody would just send their kids to Marshall, they could just have Aquinas at Marshall. Chicken and the egg, right? So how do you make that happen? We have a diverse city. We have socioeconomic diversity. We do. We have to get people to invest in our schools. We have to get people with means to not leave. We have to have those hard conversations. I went to a neighborhood in Swillburg, and none of the families would use the school. They all had different reasons of why they wouldn't use the school. That's literally steps from their houses. And if they didn't get their kids into school 58 or school 12, they were leaving. That won't happen under my administration.
How? You're going to convince them to send
Yes. Them? Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to have a plan. We're going to sit down and have a plan. And if people won't use that school, we're going to find out why. We're going to fix the problem. We're going to get all the neighbors in a room together and say, what's it going to take? Let's go together. Let's figure this out, because it helps all kids and it helps our city and it strengthens our neighborhoods. It is so important. This isn't about sending rich kids or white kids into a school to be the saviors. It's not what it's about. It's about tying our fate together and making sure that all of our children have the same investments and opportunities. This is about building a community and a strong public education system, but it's not going to happen if everybody leaves. And that is what's happened in our city school district. We need to have those conversations with parents. If we're not successful, we're not successful. But no one's trying right now. The fact is, Hartford, New York City, Dallas have recognized the need to promote integration. to talk to families about their role and what they can do, to talk about it in terms of moral terms, to talk about it in terms of being citizens, to talk about it in terms of building a community. But you're going to have to solve the problems, though, that might prevent them from wanting to use those schools. It's going to take hard conversations. I know that there are families who don't want to leave our city. They all tell me that. They love the city. They love their neighbors. They love their houses. Okay, well, let's fix this. Let's find a solution that works for you. We can have an education ombudsman at City Hall to work directly with families who call up and say, look, I don't want to leave, but I'm having a problem right now. I would never take choice away from families, but what I want is public schools to be the number one choice, and I will be a fierce advocate for that.
Okay, and you heard the mayor reference charter schools in her comment. Fair to say the mayor is more receptive to charter schools than you are?
She has stated from the start that she is incredibly pro-charter schools. She has worked with Joe Klein. She is very pro-charter school. We have some very successful charter schools. I would never take that opportunity away from any family or child. But we need to shore up our public school system.
I just want to know what you think about it. Jonathan Chait has a piece out today for New York Magazine titled Charter Schools Are Losing the Narrative But Winning the Data. And part of what Chait is saying is when we talk about charter schools, we kind of make a blanket comment, but for-profit charter schools are not the same as public charter schools. And charter schools in the suburbs don't necessarily have the record that they can have public charter schools in the city. Here's from his piece. He says, charter schools in suburbs have not produced measurable improvement. For another, there is a high level of state-by-state variation. The most successful charter systems tend to be highly regulated, with controls to require high-quality operators and close down low-performing schools. Systems that rely on the market entirely tend to perform much worse. The best charters tend to be non-profit public schools, open to all and accountable to public authorities. The less private the school choice programs are, the better they seem to work. What do you think?
We've had a real mixed bag of charter schools in Rochester. As a whole, they do perform better than our public schools, but I would say this, the best charter schools in the city perform just as well as the best public schools. Now, charter schools are public schools. We can argue over that, but they're independently run. They don't have the same accountability and transparency standards, which I have a huge problem with. But the fact is that our best city schools and our best charter schools perform the same. That means that we can do this in the city. We can do this within the city school district. You know, kids are going to be left behind if we keep going on this down this road and building these different tiered systems. Charter schools don't take all kids, and it's not the direction I think we need to go in. We can keep what we have. I wish there was more local control and oversight, but we need to shore up our public school system. We cannot do that, though, if we do not integrate and get socioeconomic integration. We won't be able to do it. We can put all the resources we want to in a school, and we can help children improve their lives. But if you want to move the needle on achievement, isolating our children and keeping them separate isn't going to work.
Jim Shepherd said last hour that a countywide school district would be his nirvana. Do you agree?
Yeah, it would be mine, too. That's why it's called nirvana. Ain't going to happen. Look, there is no will to do that. I don't care what surveys say. Everyone feels good about saying they want diversity, but look what happened in Spencerport when they just wanted to have a few bright young children from the city go there. It was a disaster, and I'm glad Spencerport made the right decision in the end. Urban, suburban, regional magnet schools will be great for the kids in them, but it doesn't represent system-wide change. And that is the major philosophical and difference between me, Lovely Warren, and Jim Shepherd. I don't believe in a piecemeal approach. We can keep going. We can keep some of the programs we have. That's fine. It's not going to represent the change that we need as a community. I'm willing to lead that change. I'm willing to have those hard discussions. And I will push for a plan, an actual plan with stakeholders at the table to accomplish this goal.
All right. So one more set of questions. And then listeners, you're going to finish the hour with Rachel Barnhart. You have said that if the administration and the city of Rochester allows RBTL to build a performing arts center in the suburbs, that is a failure of leadership. That if they're going to do this, it's got to be in Rochester.
Well, but we have RBTL is in the city, and it should remain in the city. It has a facility right now. And I'm not opposed to a new performing arts center. I'm not committed to one being at Parcel 5, and we simply have not done the due diligence that we need to do. But heck yeah, it would be a major travesty if RBTL were to go to the suburbs. It would be horrible.
Rothschild has essentially said it's parcel five or it's going to be the suburbs.
Well, I don't know what cards he has to play. He has no money. And in order for him to get his theater built, he's going to need a strong mayor who can get people around the table to raise the funds. His project isn't real because he has a mayor who can't get it done. He has a mayor who doesn't have the support. Joe Morelli told her to go pound salt. He wouldn't even endorse her in this election, which shows you the state of our local Democratic Party and how they interact with each other. The fact is, Arnie Rothschild doesn't have any cards to play to say he's going to the suburbs unless he can raise the rest of that money. He's going to need the state to do it. The state has already told him no. But yes, it needs to be in the city. There is no question.
Where?
Well, that's a great question. Here's what we need to do on Parcel 5. We need to take a giant step backward. We need to make it a temporary park. The Parcel 5 debacle shows the need for some structural reforms at City Hall that put citizens first. Number one, when you have an RFP for any public land, that would include Parcel 5, it would include the Port of Rochester, you need to tell anyone submitting, look, your designs are going to be public. You are going to have to face public scrutiny and public questions and public hearings, and we're not making these decisions behind closed doors. The public deserves that right. These are important projects. We also need to end pay to play, and that would be part of a package of ethics reforms that I would like to introduce. As a candidate and as mayor, I will not accept donations from people with business before the city, including developers, and I would not accept donations from any city employees. That would also be designed to put citizens first. We need a stronger ethics code, one that very clearly lays out conflicts of interest. This is what New York City does, that doesn't allow people to leave, come back, and lobby on behalf of their new employer. And the ethics code needs to have teeth. It needs to have penalties. We need to have an arts fund. This is something that we can do. We can start small and build it up. We could possibly partner with the county, which does give unrestricted arts grants already. This is something that we could really use to stabilize our nonprofit arts groups. We can come up with a comprehensive arts plan for the community. And finally, Parcel 5 shows the need for a comprehensive facilities plan for downtown. We've got the convention center, the Blue Cross Arena, a possible theater, the soccer stadium. These are all facilities with tremendous, tremendous infrastructure needs right now, and there's no plan to pay for it. We need to take a step back and figure out what we're doing here and how we're going to do it. Parcel 5 exposed all of those issues, and that's how I would handle that issue as mayor. As for the theater, I've seen some studies that have been done. I think it's wonderful that Tom Golisano presented this $25 million opportunity, but we don't know what that opportunity is yet. We just don't.
All right, Maxine in Rochester on the phone with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, Maxine.
Hi, my question is about pedestrian safety. We have new bike lanes, and there's been a lot of talk about getting people to ride bikes, but actually most people walk. In my neighborhood, the crosswalks haven't been painted in years. Also, when I press the button, and if I'm late arriving in the cycle, when I press the pedestrian walk button, I have to wait for that cycle to finish, then for a new cycle before I can finally walk. So people who wait that long typically jaywalk. I've seen it. I see it all the time. In the winter, the snow plows make mountains so that in order to get to the crosswalk, you have to go over a mountain of snow. So you can't get to a crosswalk. You have to, even at the lights, you have to get out into the street away from the crosswalks to be able to cross safely. Can you talk to me about your what you might do to encourage pedestrian safety?
All right, sure. Maxine, thank you.
Yes, this is an issue that is so important to me. I am an avid advocate for pedestrian cyclist safety and for transit. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to implement a program called Vision Zero. It is an evidence-based program that started in Sweden in the 1990s, and it's now in place in New York City and in other cities across the world. Vision Zero starts from the premise that we all make mistakes when we go out for a walk, when we ride our bikes, and when we get behind the wheel. So Vision Zero asks, what can we do to mitigate these mistakes? The first thing you do is enforcement. We got rid of those red light cameras. We put nothing in their place. We need major traffic enforcement. Number two, you do education. You do a massive community-wide education campaign, and you talk about things like aggressive driving and speeding and failure to yield, and you make those behaviors just as unacceptable as texting and driving or drinking and driving. And number three, this gets to what Maxine was talking about. You do the built environment. What makes us safer? Crosswalks, devices to cross the street, traffic lights, lighting, curb bump outs, narrowing roads. There is so much that we can do. Bike lanes, there's so much that we can do to make the built environment safer for everyone, to slow down cars, to put cars in their proper place. This is a social equity issue as much as it is a safety issue. We have many neighborhoods where people are relying on foot or on bike to get around. And frankly, it's a behavior that we should encourage anyway. And so Vision Zero is one way to make sure that we are putting pedestrians and cyclists on equal footing. It's very important for a healthy city, and it is something that has been proven to reduce traffic injuries and deaths.
All right, let's try to keep it moving as quickly as we can. Steve and Henrietta. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Evan. Love your show. Loving the discussion today. Really loving hearing from Rachel today. Rachel, some of the folks in the LGBT community and the gay community felt like felt their feathers ruffled a bit by when you ran against Terry Bronson, which I don't think was 100% always fair. I know Lovely Warren has had to mend fences with the gay community as well. I was just wondering, how would you reach out to the gay community, or what would you like to say to people who are in the LGBT community who are maybe considering voting for you on Tuesday?
Yeah, thanks,
I can take
Steve.
My message off the air.
Yep, thanks.
Sure. Thank you so much for that question. I would say that, you know, I ran against Terry Bronson because I believed in system-wide change at the state level. I still believe it. I'm a reformer, and I would look forward to working with Harry Bronson. You know, it was a real shock to my system last year to have people angry with me because I was running against a gay man. It's something that made me horribly sad because I am a huge fan of equality, and I'm a fighter for equality. I am an ally. And I learned a lot from that race. I learned a lot about identity, the importance of identity, and it's something that I really take to heart. I would say that LGBTQ rights are incredibly important to me. I have many supporters who are in that community, and I will continue to listen and do whatever you need me to do to make sure that you are safe in our community and respected, because it's incredibly important to me. And I will say, you know, as far as Lovely Warren goes, I think in this campaign, she's supporting Willie Lightfoot. She got the Democratic designation for mayor. She turned around and booted Jackie Ortiz and Matt Judah, who is the only LGBTQ candidate, from her slate as she got petitions that people have to get a certain number of signatures to get on the ballot. Her team, she replaced them with Willie Lightfoot and Mitch Gruber. And so Mitch and Willie and the rest of that group went and petitioned to get enough signatures so they could all get on the ballot together. And Willie Lightfoot, you know, said during the designation process that being gay is a lifestyle choice. And Lovely Warren still chose to support him and work for him and get him on the ballot. And she is now distributing literature to have him elected. And I personally think that that is concerning. So to answer your question, I'm just really appreciative of the question, and I will be as responsive as possible.
David emails to say, why is it when poverty is discussed, personal responsibility is never mentioned? Throwing money at this problem has only exacerbated the issue and driven people from the city.
You know, Jim Shepherd talks a lot about personal responsibility, and I think there's a role for that. But as mayor, you can't mandate people be better parents. You can't mandate kids be better students. That's just not the right approach. And frankly, the personal responsibility discussion completely ignores the fact that we have a big problem with structural racism, as the ACT Rochester report detailed. And I have a detailed response on my website to the ACT Rochester report, the only candidate to do so. And I'm the only candidate to have a plan to address structural racism. And that includes bridging the digital divide, improving transit, improving traffic safety, better connecting jobs and job programs with residents, ending job sprawl, desegregating our schools, and adding childcare. You know, we haven't talked about childcare. That is a huge, hugely important thing to me. And it's become far more important to me as this campaign has gone on and I've been able to meet with voters at their doors. I have women telling me that they're paying half their salary, $1,000 a month, to have an infant in childcare. And the county simply doesn't have enough subsidies. What are these women to do? What are our families to do? The city of Rochester needs to step up to the plate. The city of Rochester needs to help fund these spots and find creative ways to do so.
Is there somewhere that the city is spending money now that you don't like that you could move money around? Because some of what you're talking about is expensive.
Absolutely. The first thing the mayor has to do is the budget. I mean, before you get into office in January, the first thing you got to do is the budget. No doubt in my mind, there's fat at City Hall. No doubt in my mind, there's bureaucratic excess, professional service contracts that we don't have to do anymore. I certainly won't have a security detail that's $200,000 a year. Divide that by 6,000. That's how many kids that you can serve per year. We will find the money. It's a matter of priorities. Will we be able to do it immediately? Maybe not. But I also want to add, though, there are early childhood experts and organizations in our community that have a lot of creative ideas for how to fund childcare, how to work with companies. And I want to be an advocate for our parents. I knocked on the door of one woman who works at a call center, and she said, there's hundreds of us. We all have kids, and wouldn't it be great if we had a childcare center there? And I thought to myself, yeah, and as mayor, I'll call that company and see what we can do. Maybe there are creative solutions there, but is anyone picking up the phone having those conversations? Rochester could really be an innovator on childcare, and I'm very eager to have those discussions. So in short, personal responsibility, yeah, we could talk about that, but I think we have major structural problems in our community, and our MAPI, I really want our MAPI to come under the umbrella of a government agency so it is transparent, and I want them to focus on big picture policy issues like the earned income tax credit, which is the most successful anti-poverty initiative in our country. Giving people money does work. We should look at ways to expand that and make it year-round.
All right, I got about a minute left. Your mother called. I don't have time to take it. She wanted to wish you well. Larry, in the first hour, called and said, as an undecided voter, he's between you and Jim Shepherd. He doesn't really know what to do.
Let me address that.
Okay, about a minute left.
Yes,
go ahead.
I would like to address that. I think it's very clear that there's a candidate who has a lot of vision and passion and a will to move our city forward, and it's very clear that the other two candidates are status quo candidates. Lovely Warren will get less than half the vote on Tuesday, but if people don't make a decision between me and Jim Shepherd and go one way, we're going down the tubes. Jim Shepherd's not viable. He is so damaged in many parts of our community, particularly African-American communities. He can't win. I'm viable. Lovely Warren's voters and Jim Shepherd's voters, black, white, they don't have a problem with me. Vote your conscience. Vote for the person who clearly aligns with your beliefs and values, and I can win.
Rachel Barnhart joining us for the hour. James Shepherd joining us last hour. We reached out and hoped to have Mayor Warren before the election. It didn't work out with the schedule. I wouldn't take it as anything more than just a difficulty in scheduling. First of all, she's the mayor. Second of all, it's the tail end of the campaign. So we take no offense to that and certainly hope to have her on the program very soon. Our thanks to Rachel Barnhart. Thank you, Rachel. It's nice having you here.
Thank you, Evan, for everything you've done.
All right. Our thanks to Jim Shepherd as well. Our thanks to the Warren campaign as well. She's been on the program twice during this campaign as well. And you can find all of those interviews archived at WXXINews.org/connections. Our thanks to John Andrus, engineering, Megan Mack producing, Audrey Sample, the intern. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio.